Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dusty crevices explored and polished with wit and clarity. His art is uncontrolled concrete. We remain tantalized by his presentations. We submit Jeremy Deller.
Jeremy Deller, very nice to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Was that an introduction?
It certainly was, yes.
It was waffle.
It was great.
It was great. And it was done in the back of your car.
It was done in the back of a car. I wrote it in the back of a car whilst I was driving. Does that make sense? No, someone else was driving.
So, Jeremy, welcome to the show. Has much happened to you in the back of a car ever?
That's a really good question.
I'm
usually driving, so it's not often I get to be in the back of a car.
I don't like getting in the back of a car, do you? I can't imagine you ever being in the back of a car, unless you've been driven by a chauffeur.
No, but even though I like to sit in the front so I can see where I'm going and bellow instructions and try and grab the wheel if I think it's appropriate.
No one around this table, I would imagine, sits in the passenger seat with a member of your family driving.
It's not. It's the recipe for absolute disaster, isn't it?
My wife will go to sleep. Whenever I drive, she will sit in the passenger seat and go to sleep, and I could never do that.
That's a very good skill to have, I have to say.
To sleep?
Yeah, when someone else is driving.
Yeah, I think
so. You don't have to get engaged with the...
Yeah,
traffic and
their mistakes and wrongdoings.
I think the biggest rows I've had with my partner have been in cars, without a doubt.
What about your driving skills?
Or about her driving skills when I allow her to drive. This sounds terrible. This makes me a terrible person. We need to get off this subject very quickly,
let's talk
please.
About prices. We talked about putting prices on
You've
things.
Been at one of the big giant art fairs, and we were just saying, if you go round some of those things, they never have the prices on, which is a bit annoying, because then you've got to ask the person how much, and then that means that you're stuck talking to them for 20 minutes, and then that's like, suddenly, if you do that at every place you stop, you're going to be there for 2 days.
But you could go around with your own price gun and put them on.
That would be much better.
Yes.
What you think it's worth.
But I like to see the price on everything.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't like hidden prices.
Yeah. Especially sort of medieval altarpieces and things like that in the fair. Because it is interesting to know the value of... What value is assigned to things like that compared to contemporary art, which is very, very highly priced on the whole?
Yes, that's right. The art of the living, because you are both artists, but the art of the living is generally much more expensive than the art of people that have died centuries ago.
Yes, centuries ago. If they've recently died, then it's even more... That's the highest.
But that's that's a showbiz general rule. I think, you know, if a great career move, drop dead.
I think the problem with contemporary art is people just think about how much it costs and that alienates them from... the work itself. And I think that's why children are actually a very good audience for art, because they react to contemporary art in a very basic, visceral level. And I think that's, for me, that's interesting, having that children as an audience.
I think that's true of music, actually, funnily enough. I think small children are a much better audience for music. But when they get sort of to be teenagers and they're groovy and they're much less open to ideas, whereas when they're little, they're just like kind of something that gets them going. They feel it much more instinctively.
But there are certain things within contemporary art that you can't put a price on, literally, like our friend Martin Creed's lights going on and off, for instance. You can't put a price on that, can you?
You can't, but he did sell it. He did sell it to the Tate.
How do you sell it?
Which piece did he sell
today? You sell the idea, but also you sell the sort of technology to make the lights go on and off in that very specific way. Martin is a very specific artist.
Yeah.
He would think about that for years before, I suspect, before he makes it a work.
Is there a piece of art that you've created which you can't put a price on?
I did something that cost a lot of money to make, but you can't put a price on it because it was an experience.
What was that?
That was when I got people all around Britain to dress in World War I costumes, and what uniforms and just be themselves around Britain and travel through Britain on the anniversary of the first day of the Battle of the Somme.
Which is a great idea. So what do you do? Get a grant for it?
There was a big pot of money to commemorate the First World War. That's when there was money going around about 5 years ago. And I was asked to... The Somme is a bit of a problem because it's the biggest military disaster in British history. And how do you commemorate that? And I was asked to come up with an idea to commemorate it.
Just tell us a little bit more about what it comprised of, because the people who you got to be, did they have a name each of a person that was lost in the war?
They did, and it was basically as about 2,000 almost exclusively men who were dressed as soldiers in very accurate uniforms.
World War One soldiers.
Yes, and they congregated in places in public and moved through public spaces, moved through shopping centres, all unannounced, which is very important. And they were just present, basically, in public life in Britain for a day, and going on trains and so on. They didn't speak to the public, but they all had a little card with the name of someone who died that day.
And were they wearing that?
No, if you paid any interest in them or took their photograph, they'd come up and give you a card. It's like a little gravestone, basically, saying the regiment and the anniversary and so on. And so that was it. But it was a sort of viral artwork in the sense that it travelled through the body of the country. And we had it in Northern Ireland. It was very important to have people in Northern Ireland, even though that was a very difficult decision to make because it's men in British Army uniforms walking through the streets of Belfast and Derry. Mm. And so that was a interesting moment as well, those negotiations, but it had to be through the whole of the country. So a lot of people saw it. Maybe over 1 million people saw it in person that day.
Probably more. I think it must have been, if you had that 2,000 people,
yes,
on great public spaces.
Yeah, on sort of sidings of motorways, yeah, yeah, and bridges. And we started at railway stations at 8 in the morning. The busiest railway stations in Britain, so you get hundreds of thousands of people see it before 9 o'clock in the morning. And then the guys go off, they walk through towns, they get on buses, they go through the countryside, they went up Snowdonia and back, you know, they yeah. went through the countryside as well. It's very important to do. So it was humans, it was meant to be humans. It's all about bodies and humans going through space and sort of.
And that's a great work because you couldn't put it in a gallery. You couldn't have it and hang it on your wall at home.
Yeah.
You couldn't buy it.
No.
You could only experience it and feel. It'd be very hard not to feel. I mean, the job of art is to make you feel something, and that would certainly make you feel pretty.
Well, we were worried. I'm a bit of a pessimist, and we did a lot of role-playing with the participants because we thought that, you know, people in the street would abuse them in some way, drunk people or people who didn't want to see soldiers. And so we did all this role-playing about them being shouted at and whatnot. And in the end, it was people crying and talking to them and crying, especially women, who would go up and get very teary around them. So we were very shocked at that response from the public. Yeah.
And were they all young, like the people who went off?
They were, and I think that was the other thing. They were all about 19, 20. They were students and drama students, but just members of the public. But it was a week after the Brexit vote had happened and the country was in turmoil. And I think people were very stressed about that. And I think a lot of the emotion was around the chaos in the country.
You've also done, a friend of mine went to see your reenactment of the miners' strike.
Yes.
Battle, which was great.
That was a reenactment. It was over 1,000 people reenacting a battle from the miners' strike in the place where it happened, with former miners taking part, but also members of reenactment societies.
Who would do what, sort of a civil war and Roman
so
versus...
There's an absurdity in it. There's a potential for absolute comedy and absurdity for that, which I was facing down in a sense because I knew that was going to be a problem potentially. Because I'd been to a reenactment before and at the end, it's amazing, this reenactment called History in Action, where they call it multi-period reenactment, so it's from Romans to Second World War, maybe even a bit of Vietnam War. And at the end of the weekend, they all parade in front of each other, clapping each other, or saluting, and all this sort of stuff, and like hitting their spears against their...
So Romans come in past
yes,
the Civil
and they're
War
all like,
on the...
And it's like yeah. and it's amazing. And then at the end, they all go onto this field, and they all fight each other, all the different periods from... warfare, and there's a tank and with Vikings on it, and it was just the most amazing.
Got to go.
I mean,
yeah.
we
but
love
it's
it.
Totally, it's you know, they're so health and safety conscious that it's absolutely forbidden to do this thing, but they always do it, I think, or they're allowed to this time. And I wish I'd known, because I would have just run onto the pitch and just like filmed it up close, because it is like literally sort of machine guns against, you know, sort of spears, and they're all whacking each other, and it's total chaos.
Where's this?
This was, well, it's once a year, and English Heritage did it, and it was called History in Action. But when the reenactors recreated this battle from the miners' strike, they got to meet real or people that have been part of a campaign.
So this is like reenactment. I've seen these reenactment things. Like you got the army and that, but so these were miners.
These were reenactors who were dressing either as miners or police, and the miners were dressing either as miners or police. The reenactors were terrified of the miners. We had like 200 former miners and 800 reenactors, and the reenactors thought the former miners were going to start a proper riot, if not revolution.
Yeah.
And so they were terrified of them, and the tension is palpable in the film.
What would you reenact?
Going to say it's kind of down to maybe facial features. You see, you look like you could be quite a cruel baron.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to say.
It's a good nickname.
It is a good nickname. Yeah. The cruel baron. Yeah. He's here. I can see it on the posters. Plenty of tickets still available. Yeah.
Now, I'm sure you'd be a very malevolent. Benevolent.
Yes, not malevolent.
Malevolent, yes. Or yes. Benevolent. You know, you could do with that thing. This side, I'm malevolent. This side, I'm benevolent.
Yeah. Well, thanks. You've just been at had some new work at an art fair. What sort of thing have you been? What sort of work is it that you've been putting?
I actually have it here, and it's very kind of you to ask. But I've done a retrospective of my career, but in stickers, and I've stuck them to the door. And these are some of the. These are some of the stickers.
Oh, I love a sticker.
This was one referring to the fair itself, because that's how much it was...
I paid £245 to look at this door.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So these are the stickers.
So these are stickers of your works of over there. Strong and Stable of My Arse, which is what you had on the posters.
Yes.
Theresa May,
wasn't
it?
Yeah. I love these. Thank God for immigrants, yes. More poetry is needed. I love joyriding.
Yeah.
But that's for us. This is Joyride, but you're on.
You can put that on your car.
And I see you got Save the Hen Harrier.
Exactly, I'm big on that issue.
So I've just done a painting and a load of prints for Save the Hen Harrier.
Right.
Not long ago, about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Chris is involved in that, isn't he? And
And I just did a big print.
They do one day a year, they do a sort of mass trespass, sort of, onto moorlands. And they have the night before, they have like party and talks and stuff.
And it's to stop them, because they are awful what they do to them. They put traps down and poisoning them and doing terrible things.
Did you now, you're here as a part of Stonehenge?
Yes.
And you did an inflatable Stonehenge?
I did.
I mean, that's a unique thing to have done, isn't it?
It is. It's called Sacrilege, because there's a picture of it there on this. This is very handy, this sticker pack, because you can just see all my work.
And that's a sticker of someone doing is it a backflip? It's on your bouncy...
Stonehenge,
A bouncy Stonehenge, but full size, though.
Full size. I worked out very quickly that if you want to... When this goes up, people want to take pictures of you, if you're the artist, on it. And I just thought, there's no way I want that. So you usually get youngsters who are sort of gymnasts to come and do little displays, and that... deals with all of that element of, because I didn't really want to be photographed jumping around with it, because there's no
it's a young man's game.
There's no dignity on an inflatable Stonehenge, believe me. So that's a new work I've done there. It's a chameleon. It's a slide at the bottom.
Oh wow! So this is that real?
Yeah, I made that. Well, I didn't make it. Someone made it very well.
So this is a huge chameleon with its tongue out, and that's a slide.
Yeah,
like you would get at a children's park.
Yeah.
That's great.
You go up the tail and down the slide into the body.
Where could we see this chameleon?
That's in a town in Belgium called Knokke, which is this resort town.
Is it?
In Belgium, where they have it's quite a fancy town, actually.
It is. It's one of the fanciest towns in Belgium.
I think it is maybe the fanciest. Mm. I mean, it's a ridiculous place, in a way.
It's the Chislehurst of Belgium.
At least, Bournemouth. Yeah. Bournemouth meets something.
Meets Knightsbridge, meets the lot.
It's full of, like, very old men with their wives, who are also quite elderly, driving Porsches and barely able to get out and into them, you know, but with all the gear on. And it's very, very rich Belgians.
We'd like that.
I'd like to go and see that. What about your have you got any of your Depeche Mode film? I remember seeing, and I love that.
Oh, thank you. I don't actually. I should have had, because that was a lot of fun to make.
That was our hobby is Depeche Mode.
Yeah. It was never really. I mean, it was paid for by the record company, but you know what record companies are like. They were very. There were some problems with the film, some people in the film, let me put it like that, namely a German family who dressed up as characters from the videos and made their own home videos of themselves as these strange creatures that were in some of the films. And I think
Were all people who were fans of Depeche Mode.
Kind of like super fans, a lot of them. But that German family pissed off a lot of the German fans, because they just... they thought they weren't taking the band seriously enough, this family who did all these funny things. And the title of the film comes from the mother of the family saying, some people's hobby is sport, our hobby is Depeche Mode. And I just thought, wow, that's a, such a great thing
were
to
they,
say.
Were they all in Germany?
No, they were Russia. Russia were Russians, the most in, most so, amazing fans
and
in
Depeche
Russia.
Mode, let's remember, Depeche Mode are globally a tremendous phenomenon. They're one of the, it's a world popular band on a scale that people, I think, maybe in the United Kingdom probably aren't as aware of what their enormous popularity this, around the world is. Like, they're a stadium...
South America.
...world-beating, stadium-filling band.
They're as big as U2 in a lot of countries, in Mexico especially, but we don't appreciate them for the band they are in the UK because of I think we think about them as this sort of top-of-the-pops band.
Yeah.
But they have this huge following, and in Russia... They're as big as the Beatles probably were. They have the same significance that the Beatles might have had in America or Britain in 63 because they sort of their music was part of the whole kind of liberation movement for the country as well. So their fan base in Russia is very, very devoted but absolutely obsessed with them.
Are there other countries that have taken to you?
Well, apart from Britain, we are assuming, I suppose, that maybe France. I think the French like was my sort of... possible questioning of Britishness maybe at times. I think they quite enjoy that.
And that's famously the hardest, you know, they don't jump into loving people. No. Once they do, you can't go wrong with
them. Yes. So France, I have a following. Maybe Germany as well. America's difficult. It's a difficult one.
They really struggle with irony in any way in America. I remember seeing, I was over there with, in Canada actually, but it was full of Americans at the comedy festival in Montreal in, I think, about 1990.
You shouldn't go to a comedy festival without an understanding of irony, surely.
Well, if you're American, because we, Bob and I had, we sang a song called Lucky Carpet, because the essence of it was, he said, I'm having a lot of bad luck, and I said, you need, you know, like a rabbit's foot sort of thing. I said, but if you want a lot of good luck, do what I do and carry this. It's a 12-foot carpet, rolled up lucky carpet. and then sang a song, It's My Lucky Carpet. I bought it in the market.
Brilliant.
But they were in the front row going, well, that's too big. That's stupid. You couldn't carry that around. So the irony was completely lost, and they just thought, well, that's a ridiculous suggestion, which they would think the same with inflatable Stonehenge.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it never went to America. It went around the world. It went to Australia. It was very popular in Australia. And,
well, there's a lot of the sights of the old country they'd probably like to see, wouldn't they? You know,
I mean, it went to Australia, and it kind of ruined the thing itself, the inflatable, because it was so hot, it was during a heat wave, which they sort of have every year, basically. But people were burning their feet going on it, but still wanting to go on it for some reason.
What a great compliment to us. Yeah. Despite sort of...
I know. See, if that was America, you'd be sued, wouldn't you? So you wouldn't be able to do it. But so it's interesting, the inflatable Stonehenge, because wherever it goes around the world, the reaction is more or less the same from the public. People just go on and love it. And it's almost a bit overwhelming to get a response that's so overwhelmingly... joyful to something. And like I said, there's no dignity on it whatsoever. As soon as you're on it, you look and behave stupidly, basically, and that's the whole point of it. So that was really important. It wasn't just a children's thing, even though children on the whole, they can stay on it longer. It's exhausting being on it.
It's good to combine that, though, isn't it, to say, look, this is for children, but it's got there's more of a point to it.
Yeah.
What's your favourite building in the world?
In the world? Oh, you might have to come back to me about that. But I think it was, unfortunately, it was a building that burnt down, or was more partially burnt down, is the art school in Glasgow, the Charles Rennie Mackintosh building. Because the interior of that was unbelievable, and the exterior.
And its purpose. It was very sad that burnt down, wasn't it?
And it was still a working building. And every part of it, every little niche, nook and cranny had been designed. It was beautiful, stained glass, a little place to sit. And it was just a working building that was beautiful. And it's just kind of tragic when you see that go up in flames, I mean, I have to say.
Yeah, it really, because that was an amazing... Did you go in there?
I did, yes. It was very. We do shows in Glasgow, and I'd always go and have a look. And I'd look at the students' work. It was at the time whenever we went each year to do our shows, all the students would have their work up, and it was really good,
And what else? Let's have a look to see what else we've got on the stickers.
Kind of,
I heart Patrick Caulfield.
Great painter.
Yeah.
This is one. There's two here that I really like. There's John Paul, George and Fuck Brexit. T-shirt. And then there's William Morris says, don't relax, because he's a workaholic. And that's a druid. I did an event at Stonehenge, and the druids wanted to turn up. And the English Heritage were very wary of them. You know, there's always a bit of tension between them and English Heritage. It was the 100th anniversary of Stonehenge being given to the nation by the family that owned the land. And they turned up and they did this ritual. It was about 10 of them in a circle near one of the stones. And it was absolutely, it was incredibly moving, actually, what they did. I wasn't expecting to be moved by it because they weren't... He was the only one, the guy there, dressed as kind of as a druid as you'd expect, but... Most of the other people just dressed in normal clothes, and they did this ritual and said a prayer and thanked the family for giving Stonehenge to the nation. It was actually very respectful, and it was like, wow, this is really, I'm really kind of into this. I like it.
And I had a friend called John Michel who wrote books on ley lines and thus, and he was great friends with the sort of chief druid, whoever it was at the time. This is back sort of 30 years ago. And he said they were particularly upset because when the family gave Stonehenge to the nation, there wasn't any English Heritage. It was before they'd even been invented. But part of the deal was it had to be kept open all the time for the druids or for anybody.
Right.
And then English Heritage came and stopped them going there, really. They also, when I was a lad, you used to go and have your sandwiches on it. It was lovely.
Yeah, you could.
But
yeah.
Now you can't get anywhere near it. It isn't worth going, actually, because you can't get near it.
They do early morning and evening tours, but you have to book way ahead and pay an extra amount. But that's the only way you can go in quite easily. I mean, very luckily, I've been able to go in a number of times, but and it is... incredible, because the scale, you don't understand how big those stones are.
You need to be in it, don't you?
Yeah. 25 foot high, big as a house, and it's just incredible. But I think the nature of mass tourism now, it would just be trampled and...
Chipping bits off it.
Yeah.
How about the origins of... Maybe they could have a replica next door that you could...
Well, I mean, Cycrenes was a sort of attempt to sort of... to give people at least an impression of it and to go on it and enjoy it.
Your inflatable one next to it would be perfect.
Well, we did it at Stonehenge near the visitor centre. I think if you put it next to it and people were driving past on the A303 and they saw two Stonehenges, one of which is moving, people jumping
even
on it,
better.
I think it would just be pile-ups for like...
Yeah, and queues going all the way up 303 back to sort of London.
So I think that would be problematic. But it was a way of having a bit of fun with our history. I definitely am getting in touch with it, you know, literally and metaphorically.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Now, just talking about transport for a moment, which is what this is only vaguely about this, but you travel around a lot. What's your way that you like? Do you enjoy the journeys? Do you go to Australia, go to France, go to Germany, go to all these places?
Well, I didn't go to Australia. I haven't been there. It's just too far. But I just trains at the moment, and hopefully it'll remain trains. Getting to Germany on a train is really quite straightforward. So
which city in Germany do you go to?
I was working in Bonn, but also Cologne, which I really like Cologne.
I like Cologne, very good.
There's a great museum in Cologne called the name of it, the Religious Art Museum.
I was just looking at books of that, pictures from that museum last night. I did go there once, and the cathedral's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, the cathedral is amazing. So, yeah, trains. I cycle a lot. Around town, I cycle.
Do you take your cycle on the train to Germany?
I should get a second bike, which would be a folding bike. I should get one, because that would be amazing.
That's quite good, isn't it? Put your bike on the train at St Pancras and then get off in Cologne.
Okay, so here's a thought for the future of transport. What about you put your bike on the train, which is then an electric bike, which is then being charged up on the train.
Well,
you get off the train, your bike's charged up, which is enough to get you up the hill, which you were a bit worried about with your bags. to your hotel, and then you can just pedal around and enjoy yourself around the town.
I've noticed a lot of people this week riding around on electric bikes on flat
shouting at
ground,
you.
Flat, you know, where you should be pedalling.
Yeah, I think it encourages laziness.
Yeah, because it should be just electric when you're going up a hill, shouldn't it?
That's right. If I see somebody pedalling along the flat,
yeah,
I get somebody else to shout at them.
Yeah.
Do you? Mm. You'd spend a lot of time shouting on Holloway Road if you were doing that.
Yeah. Although when you're cycling, flat can be, for those of you who aren't cyclists, if you're on a long cycle, a flat road is actually more exhausting than a set of modest hills, isn't it? Because if it's just flat, you're just constantly having to pedal.
Yes,
so I won't take that back about my shouting at the...
I went for a cycle in Norfolk on the wrong kind of bike in the summer, and it was the most exhausting cycle I think I've ever done in my life.
What, on the flat?
More or less, yes, but it was on one of these sort of city bikes, and it was just wrong, and it was too hot, and I was dehydrating. I just thought, okay, I'm going to die in a ditch in Norfolk, like 3 miles from where I'm staying.
And what did he die of? Cycling.
Yeah, just like flat cycling. Yeah. So... But I did. I was trying to find a church, and I did find it, thankfully, which had amazing wall paintings in it. So that it was worth it.
What was this church?
It was. I couldn't even tell you where it was, but it was on a little path, and you walk in. You know the joys of churches. I don't know if you have the same thing. When you walk into a church, you have no idea what's beyond the door. Sometimes it's just a plain church. Other times there's wall paintings that have been discovered, an amazing bit of stained glass or an object. So I love that. I like the surprise of old churches. That's something I really enjoy a lot. So I try and do that when I'm away. Yeah. Wales is good for that.
But the one you visited had wall paintings. How old were they?
They would have been medieval. Mm. So they would have been painted over, and then they were discovered, and it was really elaborate. But I went to the most amazing church ever, I think, in terms of a decoration in Kilpeck. Do you know this church that has all the heads on the exterior? And there's a figure called Sheena Magog, I think, which is a woman just opening her vulva out on the exterior of a church. It's just
really?
Incredible. Yeah. I mean, it's like proper like that. But all these figures, there's
and
musicians.
And how old is this church?
This would have been, that would have been about 13th century. The church
so it
had
was
been,
Christian?
Yes.
Then,
but with all but this with very pagan... strange symbolism and iconography on the exterior. Weirdly, I didn't take a picture of this, the woman, for some reason, because everyone does. But
it
this
felt
is
prudish.
This was, well, strangely, this is her. In they had a guidebook, and that's what she looks like.
It's a kind of Esso man head.
Woman.
Or,
this, that's
well,
a
you
really
know the
bad
old
stuff.
Esso man?
Yeah,
this
is
a dangle.
That's not... That's just confusing.
It's a, well, a bit like an octopus. Well, she's it's pagan by the looks of things, isn't it? And she's presenting herself as if to say, let's create...
Yeah.
It is strange because that long, it seems that that long, 800 years ago, cartoons were the thing, you know.
It's only yesterday.
And it's like I was in Canterbury Cathedral last week, and there's the oldest bit of stained glass window in, I think, in the probably in the world, it's certainly in Europe. And it's a fella called Nathan, and he's up there on the window. And if you look at him, that was 1170, so he would have seen the murder of Thomas Becket before his very eyes. But if you look at him, he actually looks like Woody from Toy Story. Very, very similar.
Well, it's the other way around, isn't it, though, really?
Yeah.
Woody.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
I don't think Woody from Toy Story was modelled on him, but if you look at him, he's a real cartoon figure.
But that's when you realise, I think, when you see in those very early paintings from the 14th century and the like, or even the 18th century or whatever, that you see a face or a bit of the moment of landscape that just looks something like you've seen yesterday or somebody that you saw in the street, you realise how you're connected with all of the people who've been there before us and how like they were to us, really. We weren't. It's not like we're loads clever or anything.
Absolutely.
Jeremy, thank you very much. Thank you and goodbye, Jeremy Deller.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Well, there goes Jeremy off on his city bike to look at another church, presumably.
I would have thought so, and or perhaps do some reenactment somewhere.
This podcast was produced and edited by Molly Stewart.
Sound engineers were James Stewart and George Layton.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.